Hello, everyone, and welcome to Straight Popcorn. My name is Al Nichols.
And I'm Brock Vincent Sharp.
And we're going to talk about some entertainment things that happened this week. Let's start, I guess, with the Oscars.
Yeah, it was a lovely occasion.
Mm-hmm. Of course, hosted by Ellen DeGeneres, who wore two different suits, the first kind of being Austin Powers inspired, and the second being very white.
White?
Yes.
Like, is it Caucasian?
Well, no. I just mean the suit was very white.
Oh, okay. I thought, like, she might have been dancing to some Wilson Phillips or something.
Well, I don't even remember. I know their songs, but I don't actually remember the lyrics to any of their songs. So I'm actually kind of proud about that.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I know this is kind of off topic from the Oscars, but I got to address something real quick. Like, do you ever see something on TV and you're like, that's even too white for me?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't recall the last time that's happened, but yeah, I've been like, ooh, yeah, that just seems like bleach white.
Yeah, like Carlton white, you know.
Oh yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't, the only offender of doing that.
No, of course not. Well, I always watch the Oscars every year. It's kind of a painful time for me, to be honest, because I'll sit at home watch it. I mean, years ago, I probably did like the celebration stuff, you know, like, hey, we're gonna go have a party, people are gonna come over, whatever. I went to one year even where they were like giving out fake awards to people who came during the commercial breaks, and the Oscar for the most consumed potato chips goes to, and then they would do like that. But
see, that's pretty white.
Yeah, that's incredibly white. And I was not the one hosting that party. And I, actually, when it was time for me to accept my award, I declined. So
I would have too, man. Fight the power, brother. You know.
Yeah, I'm against this entire affair, and I refuse to accept an award from the population here. I'm sorry, I just can't do it.
You should have stomped and been like, "This is messed up."
Yeah, or I could have been like, I could have gone up and done a Kanye. Hey, I'm gonna let you finish.
Yeah,
I think it was before that time, but anyway. So the ceremonies overall were, I don't know. I mean, I actually thought Ellen did a pretty good job. I mean, it's just, you got to always think she's trying to entertain a group of people who are there and just look miserable and unhappy, and they don't want to be wearing what they are. They're, you know, this is a work function that they have to go to because it's good for their career. So what did you think of the entire ceremony?
I thought it was really like bland.
Yeah.
Like the comedy aspect of it was, I guess, like, I really liked the Seth MacFarlane one,
especially the one where he's like, and the Von Trapp family singers, and
yeah,
a gun.
Well, I mean, it was just like, I don't know, I liked the Seth MacFarlane because it brought a better balance for a night of like everybody getting their ass kissed.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to have that interruption of them not getting it the entire show.
Yeah.
You know, he really stuck it to a lot of people.
I know. People were pissed at him. In fact, didn't it the following year, they're like, we're bringing back Billy Crystal.
Yeah, and nobody asked for that.
No.
Well, I'm going on record. I'm putting the White House petition up. Nobody asked for the Billy Crystal comeback.
Please, God, no. You know what? I really liked Billy Crystal in the 90s. I still like Billy Crystal. I have no problem with him. But
I do too, but
yeah, I don't need to really see him, because this was like a very specific style. And what they basically were doing was, let's have Billy come in because he hosted a lot of Oscars back in the 90s. But for that matter, I don't really need him to come back. I really don't want Whoopi Goldberg to come back and host some more Oscar ceremonies. What's the next step? I can't remember her name. It would have been a great joke if I could have remembered her name. But anyway, there's just a lot of people that, like, we can go with something new. I'm okay with that. Like, Jon Stewart, I'd have been okay if he had come back and hosted again.
Yeah, Louis C.K. wouldn't be a bad idea either.
Absolutely not. I mean, I imagine that in years we'll probably see like Chris Hardwick hosting the Academy Awards and then also doing the follow-up show to it.
John Mulaney would actually be a really good Oscar host now that I'm thinking about it.
You know, he probably would. I was thinking about the guy who opens Conan O'Brien's show. He's the audience opener. He doesn't actually do the show all the time. He has his own podcast, too. Jimmy Pardo.
Yeah.
I think he'd be really good. Those are people who have the ability to kind of pull. I mean, I wouldn't be trying so much to pull on the audience there, to be honest. You know,
or they want to go for like real, like take it to the next level factor. Mm-hmm. Get the Muppets to do the entire broadcast. That would probably be pretty awesome.
I agree with that totally. And I would actually dump like most of the musical performances because they're just painful. Some of them are good, but most of the time it's not. And it's actually not the performers that are painful. It's actually the audience reactions of this. I actually saw one person yawning. It may have been Leonardo DiCaprio. They kept going to him all night. Did you notice that? Like every single time they went to him, it was always him. And he always just looked bored as shit. Like,
just because they knew he was going to lose.
I know. But it was still like, I don't know. He just did not seem into it. He's kind of, I've actually put him in the role now that Jack Nicholson no longer goes to those awards. He's actually now the new Jack Nicholson in the audience, like for those award ceremonies.
Yeah, well, I think that he deserved the Oscar. I'm not saying that he should have been the one that won, but mm-hmm. he definitely was awesome enough to win it if they had given it to him.
Well, Matthew McConaughey, and we're actually going to go to this topic because I was mentioning it beforehand, but Matthew McConaughey actually did a wonderful job in Dallas Buyers Club, one of his best roles. I really do have to say that. Now, with that said, overall for that film, I'm not a big fan of it now because of some new things I learned about it, specifically in the character Jared Leto plays in the film called Rayon. Now, you still haven't seen the film yet.
No. It's the last one I have to watch, and the only reason I waited is because I had to get a Blu-ray copy of it. So
sure, I understand that. I mean, so I won't give anything away about the film because I think it's still a good watch. But okay, so I'll lay out some general groundwork about the film that is kind of given away in the trailers. So of course you have Matthew McConaughey's character, who's a bull rider, finds out he has AIDS, that he's contracted it. And his character, especially in the trailers, comes off very homophobic, ends up connecting to a community of people because he's selling, you know, illegal grade Mexican HIV medications and AIDS treatments that are actually helping people, because in the States, there's nothing. Everything they give you here in the States is junk. It is ineffective. It actually makes the conditions worse. So he's going across the border, bringing it over, and he ends up connecting with a few characters. One of those characters being a transgender woman named Rayon, played by Jared Leto. Rayon. And all of that is fine because this is all based off of a true story. Now, of course, Matthew McConaughey's character in the film starts off being incredibly homophobic and, really kind of adamantly straight. And he keeps like denying everybody who's like, hey, you're gay. You know, you're like in, you know, I'm not saying this, but they're like, you're into faggots and stuff like that. That's kind of the dialogue in this film. A lot of times from like your typical redneck Texans that are, you know, represented in this film, not to say that's the way it is, but anyway, so the film goes on, all of that. So
that's the way it is.
Right. So
<I'm sorry. laughs>
I lived there for a little while. I definitely saw a little bit. There's some good people, you know. But anyway.
And Austin,
yeah.
Maybe.
And we've lost Texas. We have no listeners in Texas anymore.
I'm kidding, Texas. I have family in Texas. I just got to give you guys shit because your politicians give the rest of us even more.
I know. So. The only part of Texas that I'm really, really in love with is the city of Austin, you know, because I love hanging out there. Anyway.
Typical hipster thing.
Yes, absolutely. Anyway, so I was fine with it, and I watched this entire film, and I was comfortable with how everyone was played and represented, because my thought was, well, these are all based off of historical people, historical, but, you know, historically accurate people from that, from this story, you know, like they existed. This is what they did. This was with their lives. All of that was fine. But I just learned something recently. And here's my problem with this film now. So the entire character of Jared Leto, like, I didn't even know this, but apparently, and I should have known it because I'm a part of the LGBT community being transgendered, but apparently a lot of people were really upset that Jared Leto was cast in the role of being a transgender woman in the film. Their demand was, is like, why wasn't a transgender actress actually put in the role of that character? Which I guess is a reasonable argument, you know, like, I mean, they could have gone out and found somebody to play that role, but instead they went with a name that was going to be recognizable. Ultimately, I don't have a huge problem with that because my thought is they're trying to get people to come see that film. They're looking for someone who they think is Academy Award worthy because that's clearly what they're aiming for with this film. But my problem then became, after finding this out, this character of Rayon never existed. Not a person, not a real person, not connected to this. And also some other things about the story, like Ron Woodruff, who is the main character played by Matthew McConaughey, apparently not homophobic, and also very clearly in real life bisexual. So in the film, they make it like, you know, and for the most part, it's like, I understand what they were trying to do with the film, and they're trying to kind of come against like that big group of people who are, you know, very homophobic, and they're trying to kind of throw it back up in their face and say, you know, hey, this is what you look like and how you can change and stuff. But it just seemed like, okay, if you're telling the story about this person who really fought this battle, who really is no longer with us because he succumbed finally to this really horrible disease. And then on top of it, just to add insult to injury, you had this other character in it, which is like very stereotypically, because it was one thing when I thought Jared Leto was playing a person based out of a real life or off of a real life person. But in actuality, it's just this made up character that he says he studied for and talked to many transgender people, but no one has come forward to say like they've talked with him. So they can't even find any fact that that's actually true. And it's just so stereotypical. I don't know what you always see in a transgender character in a film. And it's more like a drag queen, you know, which that's what most people in the world think. That's what it means to be transgender, is to be a drag queen, when in actuality, that doesn't really, that's not what that means. So now knowing all of that, and also then hearing the speech that he gave afterward, I just was like sick to my stomach, you know?
Can I play devil's advocate on some things that you said?
Of course, go for it.
Okay. All right, first of all, I would like to address what I've been reading about, like the fact that someone transgender or cross, you know, someone cross-dresses not playing the role.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a real slippery slope when we start talking about stuff like that, because there are some really great gay actors that play straight men.
Mm-hmm.
There's also really great straight actors that play gay men.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, multiple roles with different types of sexuality, or, you know, whatever someone's into, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I don't think that that's something that should even be a debate, because, you know, if someone's good at what they do, they're good at what they do.
You're right.
And I don't really want to put limitation or blocks on what the other groups can do too.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, that part I'm okay with.
Yeah. And for the most part, I am too. Like, I understood the argument, because most transgender people really aren't represented accurately, or most actors are basically denied. But
right.
I again, for that point of the argument, that's something I wasn't totally on board with. Like, okay, they just put it, they gave it to an actor who they thought was best going to fulfill that role. And as long as I had the understanding of the film that I did, I was okay with that. But anyway, go on.
I mean, the other thing, I guess, is what I wanted to get to is, I mean, there's a lot of movies. I guess it's not the first movie that's used, like, fact to manipulate a point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at Argo, for example. I mean, Argo sure. wasn't completely the truth,
mm-hmm.
but it was getting a point across that there's like heroes that aren't in war that we kind of skip around.
Mm-hmm.
And it was trying to get that point across. And also some of the smarts that, you know, the security agencies use in Washington, D.C. But that story really wasn't as clear cut as they made it out in the movie. I mean, it was a little bit more complex than that. So, you know, they make up characters that put this in here because, I mean, ultimately, you want to kind of manipulate your viewer into seeing what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, let's be honest, in this day and age, easy to do that.
That is true.
As much as it used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make a movie back in the day and, like, most people were book smart enough to get it, like Network or Dog Day Afternoon or, you know, some of those movies. They're a little bit more thought-provoking in what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now people are like, now. So they have to like be a little bit more manipulative to make people understand what they're trying to say.
Of course.
When in all honesty, all these people should have been reading their newspapers.
Yeah.
Well, so yeah. I get what they're trying to do there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you've got, I mean, I can say I wouldn't be guilty of doing that if I made a film.
Right.
You know, that's something that was a historical fact or a true life story because sometimes, I mean, just certain things don't work from a true life story.
It's true.
That yeah. would just end up being boring. I mean, I would love that challenge to be able to take a story, you know, and try to make it as close to that as possible. But I would imagine it's a lot harder than it would actually seem.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, and ultimately, I mean, look, I'm no fool. I understand the difference between,
oh, I know you're-
you know, of course, I'm not, you're not calling me stupid or anything like that. I get that. But I understand the difference between based on a true story and this is like historically accurate, you know? So I get that. And sometimes to tell a story, real life doesn't always follow the dialogue that a movie needs to, or not the dialogue, but the story points, because, you know, real life can actually be really boring. So they add different elements to a film. And I understand if, for instance, if Ron Woodruff actually was around a lot of transgender people, maybe they wouldn't have had a lot of time to incorporate that kind of character, all those characters into a film. So maybe they chose to consolidate all of those people into one character. I can understand that. But from everything I've read, that wasn't the case. Like, he really wasn't around anybody, you know, no one. And like the reason the character was invented was because they were trying to make a solid point that, you know, that he was a major bigot. Like, that is a big point to the film. And then, I don't know, for me, it was like, if I was one of the family members of Ron Woodruff, or, you know, someone who was close friends with him, I would have a problem watching a film about, you know, this guy that, you know, I loved and helped a lot of people, being made out to be a bigot and turned into kind of that agenda. As you said, I understand why they did something like that. But then just the character itself, like, really, I can actually forgive all of that. But ultimately, it's the character of Jared Leto, that what he plays, that it's just like, and it seems like more and more it was his choices that he made with that character, you know, just it was this over exaggeration and very simplistic. And to me, that gets a little weird, you know, like, especially if you're, I mean, you're going out there trying to present one message, but you're willing to go with this very stereotypical view of what a transgender person is, you know. So I don't want to be like one of those people too, you know, like, oh God, this was terrible, whatever. I mean, ultimately at the end of the day, I'm going to forget about it. You know, hopefully in the future they do a better job, you know, that's all I can hope for. That's all I can kind of strive for. But it did leave me a little bit like, I don't know about that. So, I mean, you were saying something earlier about Jared Leto as well.
Oh, yeah. I just don't like Jared Leto. Something about him makes me want to punch him in the face every time I see him. And I hate 30 Seconds to Mars. So it's yeah. like a big clusterfuck of emotions when Jared Leto comes on screen. Like, Fight Club's one of my favorite movies.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I see him get beat up, it's like, oh, yeah, keep going. You know? I can't contain myself. It just gets me happy. But
he was in Lord of War 2 with Nicolas Cage, right?
I don't think I saw that.
Yeah, that was a while ago. Yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Can we go back? Because I'm curious, you've like got me invoked and like wanting to talk about this more. I'm sorry.
Sure.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be in a defender of your viewpoint in a sense, so bear with me here.
No worries.
Okay, so I can see where you're going, because for Jared Leto's character, and I haven't seen the movie yet, so I'm kind of going on what I haven't seen a little bit, but so you don't feel like your viewpoint was represented in the film. Is that correct?
Well, it's not just about my viewpoint.
Okay.
Like, okay, so I mean, look, I haven't really talked about it on this podcast. If you want to hear me talk about transgender issues, go check out my other podcast, Elemental. You know, because I definitely
talk, which is awesome.
Thank you. But I talk about a lot of that there. Here, this is about entertainment and stuff like that. But with that particular, like, look, you know, when you think about what a transgender person is, like, you probably have a more defined definition because, well, you've talked to me, and you seem like also the type of person who's talked to a lot of other people who have come from varied backgrounds. So you have a better understanding of what that means. But for a lot of people out there, it's very, very, like, it's a very small idea. And usually, for most people, like, you ask what a transgender person is or point to an example on television or in film, they'll go to, like, RuPaul's Drag Race, you know, or I've had a lot of people do that. And I'm like, okay, that's not exactly what being transgender is. Now, sometimes a drag queen happens to be transgender, but for the most part, that's basically a performance. You know, and that is kind of comes more from the gay community. Being transgender basically means that you don't really necessarily relate to masculine or feminine, or sometimes it means that you totally feel like you are one or the other. It's complicated, you know, but and it's not like there's one definition. Transgender is like a huge, huge term to represent a huge group of people. So within that, there are subcategories and it gets very, very complicated. But in this film, it really feels like instead of reaching for trying to give this one individual a very personal identity, like trying to say, like, you know, really talk about gender confusion or talk about like this person's battle with their gender identity, it really just seems more like a drag queen. You know, it's somebody and it's like a prostitute. And again, mm-hmm. like another thing, like, okay, you know, so you create a transgendered prostitute, you know, very, again, one of these like stereotypical Hollywood ideas of what it is to be transgender. And it reinforces the idea over and over again. So when you turn on something else and they decide they're going to add a transgender character to it, this kind of feels like the prototype, you know, like they just kind of repeat this formula over and over instead of like, look, a real transgender person is just a normal person who maybe looks different, of course, because they're maybe going through some period of transition, who is just trying to be a normal person. It's, and you know, in this film, it's like, it didn't have to be a prostitute. Since this is a fictional character, it doesn't have to be any of those things. It could just be a person who's dealing with, especially during that time in the 80s, just dealing with their a gender identity, you know, like trying to figure that out. So it goes like the extra mile to be a little bit like, you know, too Wong Fu.
Yeah.
So that's ultimately my problem. Not that he was cast. Not that he did a bad job with his performance even. But I don't know. It, to me, again, it's just like, since they could have gone any direction, why didn't they? So.
I mean, I guess like... it's just like, I mean, you stumble upon a lot of different walks of life, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, and unfortunately, the transgender community is not represented very well in film. And I'll give you that. But I think that'll change. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's tons of stories I want to tell, and I'm sure that's workable in there somewhere.
Of course.
You know, because I to me, I don't want to focus on the transgender aspect. It's more the, you know, the character aspect of that person, because I just don't. It's always weird to me in a movie when people depict, I hate using this, but what they would consider alternative sexuality, you know, the mainstream would. They always like focus on that about those people, you know what I mean? Like they don't, they always like, oh, they have to emphasize that they're gay or that they cross dress or this or that. Instead of like, they're just a character.
Exactly. And that feels like it comes through a lot more in that story. Like, there's one scene in the film where Jared Leto is sitting in front of a makeup table, and he's like, and it feels, I don't know, it feels very weird. And I was watching that scene like, okay, they didn't really, I mean, and I was still, when I saw that film, like, thinking real person, but I'm like, okay, this person, did they really do that? And it's like him with a powder brush on his face, like, I want to be pretty, you know, I'm like, that feels very, I don't know. I kid you not.
Dude, I would hate that if that was a woman doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, come on, that's just bad writing.
But you know what? And it's just like what you said. I think it is going to get better. You know, I'm definitely not one of those people thinking everything's getting worse and whatever. Because I'm not getting angry about it. Like, I didn't like the representation, but really, overall, I still enjoyed the movie. I really still think it's a good movie for a lot of reasons. That's just one part of it that I don't like.
Well, at least,
go ahead.
At least we're out of the like entire 80s. Like, okay, you know, like, and I'm not trying to like invoke any controversy by saying this, but like, you know, there's what, you know, to the African American community, there's minstrel shows.
Yes.
Well, the Crossdressers had it in the 80s, and that was Tootsie and Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
Because like, at least you're not being depicted like that anymore.
That is
where you cross dress to get in someone's pants or spend time with your children,
or you're trying or you're trying to like get a job, you know, like like what was it, Bosom Buddies with
right,
it's not like that. I agree, but
so at least that's not happening. I mean, that, because I mean, why did that become a thing in the 80s?
Like, right,
we've got to cross dress to manipulate other people. Like,
we have to cross dress to lie to people. You know, because
hey, don't get me wrong, because Tootsie's one of my favorite films of all time. Sure. I just love Cindy Pollock in it. I mean,
right. I mean, it's not that the stories are bad, even. Yeah, that was just a lot of the films of that era. I have a friend actually who is writing a television show right now, and one of the characters happens to be transgender, but the way they represent them is that, like, at one point someone brings it up, but it's like they just come off almost being like a regular woman. And I'm like, good for him. That's exactly the way that's a good representation. Another thing to add to the fold. So ultimately, my feelings about the whole thing is that it's all going to get better. It's just about people basically kind of speaking up a little bit about it more, more information getting out there to the public. And, you know, sometimes filmmakers, directors, writers, even myself, I mean, I could definitely complain about a lot of people. But when I look at a lot of the things that I've written and a lot of the characters I've created, they're basically, you know, men and women. I haven't really done a lot of transgender characters myself. And it actually makes me question, like, why I haven't. So not that I think everyone needs to. I'm not saying that at all. But, you know, like, just those who feel like, hey, I have something to tell here and I want to bring a new light to it. I think that'll happen more and more over time. And you're absolutely right. With, like, the gay community, if a character happens to be gay in a film now, it's not like they have the, oh my God, we need to so talk about, like, none of that. Like, that doesn't happen all that much anymore. It used to happen all the freaking time, especially in the 90s with films like The Birdcage, you know, or whatever. But so it is getting better and it will continue to get better. So I'm totally on board with you on that. I agree 100%.
Cool. Awesome.
It's like, okay, so thank you very much, Jared Leto.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. Like, I think, like, the internet's doing this to us really bad. Mm-hmm. Like, I love film, you know this, and I can analyze stories for days, but we're almost like getting to the point where we're like, as a society, nitpicking movies to the point, like, I feel like it's sucking the life out of film.
Yeah.
Like, it really gets upsetting for me. And I'm not saying that's what you're doing. I'm just saying that, like, some of that stuff, like, what I was reading about, like, oh, somebody transgender should play that character. Well, mm-hmm. Let's not have this argument, because, like, we're now at the point where I've had, you know, people in Circle of Friends being like, well, The Dark Knight Rises was just okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, come on, you know, fuck you. Like, there's a lot of really great films out, and
you know, yeah.
I think people are like freaking out for nothing.
Well, that's one thing too. Like, when I go see a movie now, I mean, you know, I really just go to enjoy it. Or if I don't enjoy it, I try to find something about it that I did. You know, like, even if it's bad, it can be good. You know, it just depends on what kind of frame of mind you're in. So I always try to go with that type of impression. Now, if I want to start dissecting the film, sure. Like, with this film, when I originally watched it, I didn't dissect it, you know? So I should, like, you know, definitely be very clear about that. My first viewing of Dallas Buyers Club was I loved the film. Loved the film. Not halfway loved it, didn't think it was okay, loved the film. So even now, with this, like, new revelation of information that I have about all of this, I still have to remember that, and I still do admire the film and what it did. And as I already said, you know, it's just about like, look, it's not like we're running out of opportunities to tell stories, you know? And you're absolutely right. Like, also, there's one really good thing that you also made in your point that you didn't say, but basically you did. You know, it's like, does every time a transgender person get cast in a role, does it need to be a transgender character? You know, so it's like it would be like the same opportunities, you know, that we're now seeing, like most minority groups when they get brought into films, what they're trying to do now. And it's slowly happening. So I'm not saying the battle is anywhere near like, you know, finished or over. But, you know, like you're starting to see now people be cast in roles that normally would be typically reserved for your typical Hollywood, you know, white guy or white woman or whatever. It is starting to change, and you're starting to see a diversity of people come into those roles. The most talented take them over. And it's, you know, like I said, a small, very slow, gradual change, but it's happening. And I think the same is happening on that front too. So.
No, 100% agree.
All right. I'm done talking about this. This is just, you know, I think we've definitely driven it into the ground. Let's talk about Goldbergs.
Yeah, that was a really... Okay, so the Goldbergs went off the air for a little bit because there's rerun time, which is usually all the way through January.
And Olympics, too.
February. That, too. Mm-hmm. And it came back, what they would, I guess, call Season 1B, mm-hmm. Was the first episode last night. And, dude, you know, you were trying to convince me a couple weeks ago to watch it.
Yeah.
I downloaded them on Torrent. I don't care if anybody gets mad because I said that. And I watched them all the way straight through. Like, it was like crack, man. Like, I sat down with my girlfriend, and we watched, like, almost every episode.
They're great. They are absolutely stunning.
And if for anybody who hasn't seen it, the Goldbergs is basically, I don't even want to call it the Wonder Years in the 80s now. I mean, I guess that's a way to describe it.
Sure.
If you had to get someone to digest it. But it's a little bit more, it has a lot, to me, more heart than the Wonder Years.
Yeah, actually. Well, I mean, I really thought like the Wonder Years was more sentimental because you have like this.
But not real to me.
Right. You have. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, it just like Wonder Years always seemed too overly sentimental. It didn't like talk about those in-between moments as much. And I feel like the Goldberg covers that ground better.
Sure, it does. And it actually covers the members of the family a little bit more, too. Like Wonder Years was mostly from Kevin Arnold's perspective. This show, you get a little bit of all the characters and what they're doing.
Yeah, and I love the fact that there's, like, a time placement problem, which is something that I thought about with the previous writing project I was doing before. Because, like, you always watch, like, these, like, era-type shows or, like, nostalgia-type shows, and it's like they trap themselves in this timeline, you know?
Right.
And most of us don't have memories that way. Like, I've easily mixed up and said something like, oh, I read this book at this time, but that book maybe got released the year after, and I completely remembered it a different way than it actually happened, you know, and there's a lot of that. Like, for example, they did it in the last episode. Christian Slater was referenced, but the Goonies had just come out on video, and we know that timeline doesn't add up.
Right, but actually, the Christian Slater thing happened before, like that wasn't a recent thing in that show. Like he had a videotape from her years previous.
Right. So it's like this misguided. Even like there was something they referenced. I'm trying to remember what it was in the last season, and it was just completely obvious that it didn't. Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
That's what it was. That didn't happen at the time that they were sort of supposed to be in the show. So I love that aspect. Like it's really fresh for me.
Yeah.
Because I had originally started writing, I won't go too much into it, but I read something, and something that always bothered me about nostalgia-type shows is that you always have, okay, if it's in the 80s, we're going to hear, you know, Talking Heads, we're going to hear, like, Aha, you know, all that stuff. But why don't we ever hear the music before the 80s? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, why isn't there a Led Zeppelin song thrown in? Why isn't there an Elvis song thrown in? You know, I mean, it's always got to be stuck in one era, and I just find that to be ludicrous because you can still celebrate the music beforehand.
Well, I always love the beginnings, too, where it's like Patton Oswalt. He's reading the narration. He's like, it was 1980-something. And just like he doesn't remember. It was 1980-something. Like, he's really recounting the story. So,
but the last episodes when I like I was already loving the show, but it really sold me on the show was because they did an episode and spoiler alert, everyone.
Show,
where the main character Adam is obsessed with the Goonies and won't stop watching it, which I think everybody from that time period remembers doing this.
Yes.
And what I remember watching that movie and feeling exactly like Adam. Like, I wanted the Goonies adventure. I'd go, like, find caves and, you know, and all sorts of things. Like, I want to find some writing on the wall, you know, or I'd write a map out on a paper bag and go hide something in the woods and make my friends go with me. So I completely related to that episode. I was like, it's such a simple thing, but
yeah,
it was it really kind of tied into something that could have easily been boring and nostalgic. And actually, I could probably think of probably other people that had done the same thing, you know, and it just felt authentic to me.
It really did. Like with Wonder Years, for instance, because we already started talking about that, you know, they never had real moments like that either. Like those relatable moments that, oh, my God, I did that. You know,
yeah,
it was about his childhood and it was really simple. And like I said, super sentimental. But with this show, they do dare to do things like that. And that is what makes it so great. But I was watching that scene too, and of course the other part of that too was the brother and sister, you know, their scheme, their plan to get back at their brother. That seemed like that was something I could totally relate to as well, because I had my aunt and my uncle are not a huge age difference for me, really young mother on my end, so they were like, I mean, about 6-7 years older than me. And I lived with them, you know, when I was a little kid. So it was kind of a similar dynamic. And they didn't do things necessarily to that degree, but there was moments of that, you know, where it was like, oh, God, you're like totally relatability to it all. So,
yeah, it's really weird you say that. My uncle's not much older than me, too. And we hang out all the time. We're like brothers more than uncle and nephew.
Right.
He used to kind of pick on me too. So
there's always someone older in your life. There's like that little time frame where you annoy the hell out of them. And they're like so here's something I used to do as a kid. This is just an example. So we'd be in the van and I don't know if I was hyperactive or what. I just really liked rocking. So when I'd be in a car, I would kind of like, they called it bouncing. So I would literally it was in a rocking chair, but the chair didn't move. I was the one moving. So my back would go back and forth, like hitting the back of the seat like that, you know, really spasmatic. My uncle would put his fist right on top of my headrest.
Yeah.
And just basically wait for my head to come back. It was mostly a joke. It was like he was never really serious about it, but he would just laugh about it. Everyone would turn around and get a good laugh or whatever. So
awesome.
But
what a jerk.
No, he was actually awesome, but
no, I'm just being funny.
No. But
I don't know your uncle, dude. Oh, come on.
Of course, but you should.
Where does he live?
Actually, he lives in Oklahoma, so
all right, I'm driving after this podcast. I'd be like, "What's up?"
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
he's like, "Who the hell are you?" And he just puts his fist out.
Now get your ass in there and make me a bologna sandwich.
But yeah, that episode last night was amazing. I really did like the cast of kids too that they've had like in the different episodes kind of coming back for it. And especially, I don't remember what the kid's name was on the show, but they were like the one who wanted to play Data.
Yeah.
He's like, I've never hung out before. I've never even been to your house before this.
There was actually a conversation in that episode that reminded me of something when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually the data thing. We had where I used to live was pretty multicultural, and I had an African American friend named Wesley,
mm-hmm.
and he used to get mad because I'd want to play like cops, and we'd end up playing Beverly Hills Cop, which we have never really seen, but we seemed to think that that was the cop that you should be. And he always ended up getting requested to play Axel Foley. So I totally can relate to that shit. And also, it also played into with the Ghostbusters too. So
right. Oh God.
So,
oh man, that reminds me of that line in Ghostbusters 2. What was it? Rick Moranis's character. He's like, yeah, you know, and the black guy came along. We all had kind of a problem with that.
What was this in?
That was Ghostbusters 2. There was the scene at the beginning of the film where they end up going to court because they've broken their restraining order from using their ghostbusting equipment. So Rick Moranis has taken like night school for being a lawyer on top of his tax business. And so he's representing the guys. And so it's Egon and Ray and not Winston. Winston's not there in that in that scene, but it's Egon, Ray, and Peter. And they're all basically in front of the judge. And he's like, but Ian, anyway, Rick Moranis' character gets up and he's like, you know, and a lot of things happen, blah, blah, blah. And sure, they blew up the city or whatever. And then, of course, they hired on the black guy. And some people had a problem with that or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that now.
Oh, man. I don't know why. That just was triggered in my memory. Like, yeah, I remember that dialogue from that film. But, yeah, I mean, actually, in my community, when I was a kid, I was living in Irvine, predominantly Asian. So it was like, you know, I was actually, technically in that sense, I really was the minority. So anytime they wanted to play something like Power Rangers or whatever, I was always like, oh, no, you have to be that one because he's the white one.
Wow.
So
you were some racist little kid, dude.
But I was like, yeah, whatever.
Wow. But yeah, no, I really like the show. I can't wait to actually see it come on next week. Now I got something to look forward to again.
Yep.
Especially on Monday or Tuesday nights. Sorry.
Yeah, actually... I mean, on Tuesday nights for me, I mean, I watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which I really enjoy.
Yeah, I like that too.
And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I do watch it, even though for a long time I wasn't enjoying it. But recently, I think it's getting a little bit better. I don't know. Have you seen it lately?
I stopped watching after this, like, third episode.
You know what? I would say that if there's any show, I mean, I'll let you know if it gets, like, much better. But over the last few episodes, I got to say, it's definitely improved. I don't know. I think early on, one of the problems with that particular show was that they kept trying to refer back to the bigger Marvel universe, keep dropping names like, oh, wow, that sounds a lot like a Tony Stark venture, you know, like kind of that thing. But now they've stopped doing that and they're more focused on what they're doing, which is appropriate because, I mean, they really can't work on anything like, you know, any Cataclysm level thing, because then you would just expect the big superheroes to be a part of that. So right. Now they're kind of getting to like, okay, we're kind of a small, you know, special ops operation. You know, I mean, we are just kind of covert and we're dealing with the stuff that's not like epic. So they're getting into their groove a little bit. It is starting to remind me a lot of like the first season of Buffy. You know, because did you ever watch Buffy?
Yeah, the first season is not that great.
Right, exactly. And it took them until like they got into their second season to really find their mojo, you know, kind of like what works for them, what didn't. And I think with this show, that's what's happening. Like this is technically their season 1B as well. And they're finally getting it. They're actually introducing like lower level heroes to add to their roster. To their rooster, of course, you know, because they do have Red Rooster, you know, who's a new hero. No, I'm joking. But anyway, so they're kind of finding their flow. They're kind of building up their own villains as well. And it was really interesting. Like last night's episode actually had Bill Pullman in it. Not Bill Pullman, Bill Paxton, sorry. So
awesome.
Yeah, I was like the entire time I was joking around. My aunt was getting, you know, kind of going nuts. I'm like, we're all going to die, man. Like every time, like any there was a scene like they were getting shot at, and I was just like, "We're all gonna die, man!"
I love Bill Paxton.
I do too. But yeah, so I don't know. I think that's a show that I've heard a few people complain about it, but I would say kind of stick in there. I think it's getting a little bit better. And yeah, so Tuesday nights, those are the shows. Tonight, however, because we're recording this on Wednesday, this will go up tomorrow. But I'm looking forward to Arrow. I don't know. Do you watch that show at all?
I haven't, and I know I should be, but I haven't.
You know what? If you go back and you start watching season 1, there's definitely a few episodes that you kind of... They're not bad, but, you know, they're kind of building to something bigger. But by season 2, this show has just gone off the rails. I love this show. And they introduced The Flash this past season. Not as The Flash, but Barry Allen. And they set it up because I guess they're going to be doing... Not guess, I know they're doing a spinoff series. Mm-hmm. Did you see the picture?
Yeah, I did.
I was like, gushing over that. I just thought that that was amazing. That was a great costume.
So, did you ever see The Flash that came on in the 90s?
Of course I did, with what was his name? Wesley something Ship?
The dad from Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, I remember watching Dawson's Creek like the first couple episodes, because then I never watched it after that. But I remember the dad. He was like, oh my God, it's Barry Allen. It's The Flash.
I watched the entire run of Dawson's Creek.
Oh, you did.
I did. I have a thing for like teen like drama shows. Like The OC is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. Mm-hmm. Sure, I'm gonna get a couple of like chuckles on Facebook on that one. I don't care though. Josh Schwartz is a great can't be writer.
You know what? Like, there was one episode of The OC that I always loved, and I never watched the show otherwise. But I watched this episode over and over again, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. It was the episode where Rachel Bilson with her nerd boyfriend dresses up as a Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that's a good episode.
I love that. I saw that online and I had to go watch that. I'm like, what? What?
Dude, if I convince you of anything, Dawson's Creek, I can understand. Mm-hmm. Like, it's love it or leave it type of thing. Mm-hmm. But if you ever get a chance and you're looking for something to watch, watch The OC through all the way.
Okay. I think it'll
surprise you. I think it'll really surprise
you. I never did, because I'm like, oh, I live in The OC. I'm good.
It's just a really well-written, like, drama type show. Like, it has a lot of pop culture references. Like, there's actually some really good comedy in there. It kind of takes it some places you don't expect it to go. Mm-hmm. And it has a really good balance of teen and parents. It's not exactly a teen focused show. It just got marketed that way. So,
okay. Well, you know, I think I can top your anybody out there who may be laughing about him watching Dawson's Creek. I think I can definitely top that on the humor level. I used to watch Seventh Heaven. Do you remember that show?
Yes.
Is it just the silence there of, oh my God, who am I talking to?
No, it's okay.
No,
I've seen all the Golden Girls. I'm okay with that.
Okay. But hey, we all watched stupid stuff when we were kids. I only watched it, I think, till the fourth season. And I only really watched that show, to be honest, not because I'm like, oh my God, I'm so into the Camden family. I watched that show because of freaking Jessica Biel. So
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, and it was also on, I think, before Buffy. So I'm like, yeah, got something. I got time to kill. But yeah, okay, so I think that's our TV talk. One last thing before we signed off on this podcast. So yesterday, they rolled out the Arkham Knight trailer, the finale to the entire Arkham Asylum trilogy that they started with the first, you know, Batman game back a few years ago. Brock just saw the trailer. I made him watch it before we started this podcast. Sir, what did you think?
It's probably the most amazing video game I've ever seen.
Yeah.
As long as the gameplay is just as good. Mm-hmm. I kind of want an Xbox One now. Yeah. But hey, I might be getting a Steam box when that thing comes out. That's so
very true. That would be great. Did you play the previous games?
I did. But I haven't played the most recent one. Mm-hmm. That's the only one I haven't played yet.
You're not missing much with Arkham Origins. There are things about it that I like, but you remember the map in Arkham City?
Yeah.
It's the same map. So that was a little disappointing to me. This new game might have the same map as well. You know, it is Gotham City. Like, right. I mean, that's essentially what they were saying is like, oh, this was really kind of before the Asylum. So you're essentially in it, but it's still technically Gotham at this point and just being overrun by criminals.
Right.
So Arkham Origins is very much as a origin story, kind of, in a lot of ways. But I'm really looking forward to this next game. Based off the trailer alone, and the one thing that I was really excited to hear about was that you can drive the Batmobile in this particular game, which is a big addition that people have wanted in the previous ones. In the last game, there was no Batmobile even. It was the Batwing. Yeah. It just dropped you off at locations. But I am super excited to be able to control the car.
Yeah, it looks amazing. Like, that's the closest to film I've seen a video game look.
Yeah, I actually liked. You know, a lot of times when you open up maybe the comic book or different animated movies or whatever, the cars never, you really usually compare. They're pale in comparison to the film versions. You know,
right.
This is actually one of those very rare occasions where I thought this car did a great job of really kind of resembling something kind of similar to a comic book, but kind of also incorporating elements of the Tumbler from the recent Batman films. But it was just a hot car. Like, it really did still feel like a car, too, you know?
Yeah, it's really... I can't wait to play it, man.
I'm excited, yeah.
As a Batman fan, I am sold.
Absolutely. My thought is that... And I mentioned this before we started recording, but I want this to be like a film, like what they did with that. I know what they're doing over there, you know, with Man of Steel and Ben Affleck and all of that. I'm looking forward to that, you know, seeing what they come up with. But this is something they could do right now, you know, like on that level of animation. It's and actually just the trailer itself. If you haven't seen that, I strongly recommend that you go online, find it. It's Arkham Knight. It is extraordinary. It's Thomas Wayne basically reading the last will and testament. And there's some timing even in the trailer that's amazing and just also very funny too. Like, please don't, you know, waste all your money on expensive cars and ridiculous clothing or whatever and a bad lifestyle or whatever he said. And I was just like, this is amazing.
Yeah, it really looks like a film. Like, I can't wait for it to come out.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really excited about that. I mean, there are not many games. Actually, that comes out at the end of this year, too. That was the thing I was really shocked by, because usually there's like a 2-year kind of pause between, you know, them releasing. But Rocksteady is back because they didn't do the last game. So I'm excited about that because they were awesome in the previous two.
Yeah, those are really awesome games.
Yeah, really good. They really take a lot of time to develop and, you know, really find a right story for them. So they're doing that with this one. Not sure if they're going to be continuing from where they went from Arkham Origins, or if this is just even after all of that, you know, like back to what after Arkham City. But nonetheless, it's still going to be a great game. So at least I think so anyway. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Well, one thing I did want to throw out there before we end the episode is that Hannibal's back for season 2.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody's been curious about the show, I think you should really check it out. I know a lot of people, you know, associate, you know, the Silence of the, you know, the Hannibal Lecter series as Anthony Hopkins thing. This show will make you completely forget Anthony Hopkins ever did Hannibal.
Wow.
I mean, it's really, really psychological. It's got more of a real feel to it. This might be my new Breaking Bad. Like, that's really how much I love this show. It's very well, like, the entire cinematography of the show is some of my favorite that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Like, the colors, the color palette, the design of the furniture and the costumes are just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The cat and mouse chase between Will Graham and Hannibal Lecter is probably my favorite cat and mouse chase ever. And it doesn't shy away from what Thomas Harris's writing is. Like, it accepts the gore, and it's kind of crazy because it's NBC. And it's actually probably more gorier than anything I've ever seen on HBO, including Game of Thrones.
That's fantastic. I'm actually looking forward to seeing it. I just avoided it because I think a lot of people initially started watching it because they were fans of Silence of the Lambs and the series that followed. Well, probably more for Silence, because I think the ones that followed weren't that great. But
right.
I actually told you this. I never even had seen Silence of the Lambs. I knew a lot of the dialogue from it. Because, you know, so, like, culturally, you know, everyone knows, like, I ate him with a side of fava beans and a nice Chianti, you know, like, people know that. But I was like, oh, my God, I've never even seen this. So I watched it just last night, blown away by that, really was, really impressed. But then I was thinking, like, oh, yeah, I definitely want to watch the show because I want to see, like, where they went in a different direction. Because from what I've been able to, you know, decipher, but whatever I've been able to collect about it so far is that it is a much different take, you know, like the way they pursue the story and the way that they look at the character of Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, and it's something me and a couple of friends were talking about on Facebook about the show is that the Anthony Hopkins version comes across as like a theater version.
Mm-hmm.
of Hannibal or a cartoonish version of Hannibal. Mm-hmm. Like, this really grounds it in reality, and it doesn't. It's even taken some of the like folklore of Red Dragon and kind of flipping it on its side. You know, I mean, it's just it's not what you expect. Mm. So it has a lot of surprises in store, and the direction it takes for season two is so surprising, considering what happens in the first season. I don't want to give it away. Mm-hmm. And may I also add, did you ever see Pushing Daisies?
No, I never did.
It's also produced by and written by the same guy.
Oh, man. You know, those are some shows. I don't know. It's like weird when you miss certain programs that I was just talking about this recently. Leverage, for instance. I mean, that's not on the level of these shows, but I never saw that.
I like Leverage.
I you know what? I just was so resistant to like that show. And my aunt was watching it recently. We watch a lot of the same programs. You know, we spend a little time together each evening. And we'll watch stuff, and I just didn't want to watch it. So she was watching it by herself, and I got hooked just by passing, you know, by the TV. And there was one day where I noticed we're like, this is Detective Smith. My name is Detective Tennant. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, my God, are they doing a Doctor Who reference on this?
And it's a really underrated show.
It really like, was.
Leverages. And a lot of people didn't know about it because it was, wasn't it on like USA or something TNT. Like that or TNT?
Yeah. It was only and, for 5 years, yeah.
It really is. It's one of those shows that can easily fall into the cliche that kind of gets beyond the cliche. And,
Well, that's what I really thought. Good. Actually, when, you know, remember those, they still do them, actually, the first look before you watch a movie in the theater.
Yeah.
So they did a lot of that, you know, for Leverage. And I remember, like, getting this idea of the show. It was kind of like the serious... you know, kind of con artist, you know, fooling other con artists kind of show or whatever. And so when I watched the first episode, I wasn't getting that vibe. Like it was just bad marketing, I think, you know, from TNT trying to make it seem like a serious drama. Cause you know, TNT, we know drama. Well, this wasn't quite that. This was actually very humorous and very entertaining. And, you know, it was very much like, similar in the vein of a Ocean's 11 type con in a lot of cases, or there's something else too. There was a little bit even of an A-team element as well. Not a lot. Total. Yeah, but you know, just a little bit. And, you know, and that caught me off guard. And so my initial reaction was, it would be like something like I ordered something, I got something else, and I'm spitting it out because this is not what I expected. So that was my initial reaction, but watching it now, just like I've already seen them all now, but they are incredible. Like it was a show that really was, I'm really disappointed I didn't watch because I'm unfortunately part of the problem why it ended up getting canceled. But it was great. Like Jonathan Frakes directing and also I think he was an executive producer. I'm not sure. But definitely a big influence. And then having Will Wheaton and a lot of stuff. That was great. So,
yeah, it really was good. TNT also had another show. If you haven't checked it out, it's not out on any of the streaming platforms that I know of. But Southland was really, really good. Mm. Maybe that was on USA. I might have that.
No, Southland did go to TNT, but it started on NBC.
Right, and I remember watching it was on NBC. It's crazy to me that they let what happened with that show happen, considering it had like one of the highest rated debuts of a show. Mm. And then they completely like let it go because of the writer's strike. Because I guess they thought for some reason that the show wouldn't do well after the writer's strike because people had forgotten about it, which really sucks because the show is really, really well done for what it was. But, you know.
Yeah, it's happened a lot. I mean, I think
TNT knows drama. You know what I'm saying? It knows drama, dog.
Well, remember Heroes? I don't know. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I think Heroes before the writer's strike was actually pretty good. You know,
yeah,
and then it came back and it was just horrible. I mean, actually, did you hear they're bringing that back for a miniseries?
Yeah. Oh, I'm totally excited.
I am too. I mean, I know it really disappointed me there. I really started to hate that show, but I don't know.
Yeah, it was like the Chris Claremont X-Men like took a break and came back as the Power Pack. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like. It was just terrible and all over the fucking place.
I'll be interested to see what they do. I mean, you know, I know they're not bringing back the original cast because, well, quite frankly, most of them already have commitments. I know Hayden Panettiere, she does Nashville. Oh. And there would be some characters I'd like to see again, like Hiro Nakamura. love to see him again. I loved his character, but I think it is a good opportunity though for them to kind of like, okay, this was an original idea that we, you know, that we actually presented on television. So let's bring it back. Let's see if we can make it, you know, breathe new life into it and take a different type of, I mean, because I guess if they brought back those characters, they'd have to, you know, address the past storylines. With this, they don't. So I think that's a smart move on their part.
I just hope they bring back Stephen Tobolowsky.
Yeah. Was he on that show? I don't even remember him.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, he was.
What
he
did
was
he do?
He was the villain in the first earlier part of the season. I think he was in through the for entire first season, if I'm not mistaken. But
it has been so long, I guess I just totally forgot. But yeah. Yeah, okay. I'm starting to kind of remember maybe something on that vein now. But
they need to bring him back.
Yeah.
Because I like Stephen Tobolowsky.
I do too. I love him. He's a great character actor. I mean, I would love to always see, they should bring him and Kevin Pollak in for, you know, just because like, hey, these are two screen legends.
He was Bob Bishop. I could not think of his name for the life of me, but I just looked it up on IMDb.
Bob Bishop. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to that. I know there's some other programs coming out later in the year, and I'll be interested to see what they do with those. Yeah, but I think it's a good time for television, definitely. We talked about this before. It's a great time for all the things that we love. So
on to the next subject. So what have you been watching in porn lately?
Yeah.
Nobody wants that conversation.
No, absolutely not. I wouldn't have much to say either. God, like, yeah. What the hell?
I freeze framed a movie the other day.
You know what? Most of the time, if I do put on something, it's like usually a spoof version because I just want to get a good laugh. So it has nothing to do with it being porn. It just has to do with like, oh my God, they made a porn version of Walking Dead.
So you're the guy that rented the porn version of The Cosby Show.
Oh God. No, you know, I didn't even rent them. Like I'll go online, check out YouTube clips. The porn version of The Simpsons.
Did that exist?
Yes, it is so disturbing.
Oh, no.
All the actors' skin is painted yellow. Oh God, it's... You need to go look a clip of that up. It is just very, very disturbing. So,
wow. And on that note,
thank you guys so much for listening. Please go and follow us and like us on Facebook and on Twitter. We are at Stray Popcorn, just the way you spell the words. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on this podcast. I've been L. Nichols.
I'm Brock Vincent Sharp.
Guys,
keep popping. I feel your energy, it's so over the top. I want